Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your reoccurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
You're listening to The Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
Can I just say something real quick to you dumbass texters?
Sure.
The fact that because AJ Hoffman and I are, dare I say, good friends, right? And we communicate frequently. So the fact that AJ wouldn't argue with me, he tweeted it. But for people, oh, there you go, beefing with AJ, and he doesn't get to defend himself. Shut the hell up, okay? And we're going back on text message that if you want to be a part of this circus that we run here on a daily basis, 3 rings, 3 hours, put your name on your damn text messages or go play in traffic. Thank you.
It cracks me up how much it upsets
just
you.
Just idiots.
God. Why does it bother you so much?
Because they just think that they can just pew, pew, pew whenever they want, and then they just duck and run. Get the hell out of here. I'm done.
If you'd like to troll Joe,
Joe, thanks, Jerry.
780-ESPN. See, that was a troll. I didn't even mean it. 713-780-3776. Just let Joel have it. I mean, make him go into the weekend just feeling terrible about
idea,
himself.
That's a good idea, Jeremy.
713-780-3776.
In the last hour, stay tuned for me releasing Jeremy's cell phone. You guys.
I don't care. Okay, what are they going to do?
Oh, good. Well, then put it on the Twitch.
Well, I mean, I'm not going to do something so stupid as that. But, I mean, people bash me on the text line all the time, too. I mean, who cares?
You suck,
I appreciate
too, bro.
Them. All right, Bill O'Brien. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Chuck, you're in the hive with the Killer Bees.
What's going on, fellas?
My man, Chuck. What's going on?
I got two questions.
Yep.
One for Joel. Did you honestly... were you honestly surprised by Aaron Rodgers? Because from where I sit, he's always been a narcissist. I understand he's a great talent, but to me, he's underachieved with only one Super Bowl win. And two, why would anybody want to pick up Odell Beckham Jr.? Unless you're Tampa Bay with Tom Brady in that locker room, or maybe even Patrick Mahomes. Man, that guy's a cancer, dude. I just don't understand it. And don't get me started on the Astros. I love y'all's show. Love y'all's banter. Have a good day, guys.
Thanks, Chuck. Appreciate you, buddy. Look, the one directed at me specifically, I did not see this from Aaron Rodgers. Because as much as all of the soap opera, drama queen, BS of the offseason.
I'm sorry to interrupt you. Was he on an old school phone? Because that sounded like a hang-up, like old
that's
school
our system.
Style.
Oh, our system always sounds like that. Because okay. We always used to kid that when you know someone's hanging up because we get the laser beam.
I got you. My bad. I
did not expect this from Aaron Rodgers because the one thing that he has shown me, aside from all the drama and the princess, you know, cater to me crap in the offseason, is the one thing where he doesn't let that play in was his dedication to teammates. It's the reason why he was so passionate when guys got cut that he thought were developing that he liked to have on the squad, and he wants to be involved in roster decisions. So the fact that whether he realized it or not, the fact that he did something like this, which has such a negative effect on his own teammates, his locker room, his team and their standing and their chance to keep that number one seed in the NFC, that part surprised me. Because, again, you and I went back and forth in this yesterday. We're not going to get into it again. But whether you say he lied, he deceived, and it has a negative effect on the locker room, that part I didn't see coming. I could see him acting like a diva and a princess.
I don't think he deceived the players. Maybe he deceived the media and
he
the
let him down.
Perception. I mean, there's a lot of players in the NFL that are not vaccinated. They're just flat out is. There's many people that have tested positive for COVID who are not vaccinated. And we're not having the same vitriol to those players as we are Aaron Rodgers. So, I mean, it's a tough conversation to have. It's not one that I have any fun having. Aaron Rodgers, the pushback he's had with all of this media reaction is interesting. But I'm so sick of this. I really am.
Well, I was sick of it all offseason. You know how much I harped on Mike Greenberg on a daily basis, going to that well every single day to try and get attention. I didn't need it coming up in the Cinderella story of my favorite football team with only one loss being on top of the NFC. And then you have this. It's one thing to say he's not going to be available for the Chiefs, but then it's the aftermath and all of the extra talking and the fact that, you know, all the finger pointing, the potential for fines and suspensions, and it's going to be on the team as well. As it's just that's the distractive stuff that I don't like.
713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776.
Do you think OBJ's a cancer? To
absolutely.
Get to Chuck's other question.
I do, yeah. I mean, that's why I believe that the only way I'm picking up Odell Beckham Jr. is if I'm a playoff caliber team that's desperate for a little bit more. Like, if I'm already feeling like I have a championship type team, I am not touching Odell Beckham Jr. If I'm Green Bay, I'm not touching him. Arizona, no. Los Angeles, no. Dallas, no. Tennessee, no. Tampa Bay, no. The two teams that I mentioned, Las Vegas, that's a team that needs receiver. Like, they're kind of lucky to be in the playoff conversation anyways. Nobody saw that coming. So, and you need a receiver with the tragic events that happened earlier this week. New Orleans, I mean, losing Jameis Winston, that kind of loses their luster, in my opinion. It kind of loses, like, it lowers their ceiling. And I know that they don't have the cap space, Big C, but if he clears waivers, he can sign a league minimum deal with any team in the NFL, and he gets that contract plus the contract of Cleveland. He would double dip, according to the CBA and the NFL. But he would have to clear waivers. I think somebody picks him up. I saw Seattle mentioned as a team that could pick him up. I don't really get that. I don't think he'd want to go there because he'd be their number
three
receiver.
But he's got a good quarterback, though.
When healthy. And how long does he have him, like you mentioned last segment?
He's supposed to come back this week.
Yeah, he got the pin out of his finger. I didn't see that he was going to play this week.
No, I didn't say he's going to. He could. They rumored it that once the pin was out that he could come back definitely next week. I think it's against Green Bay. But I think that overall, when you look at it, the only way I'd push back on you with that is, look, it's like saying that you've got a team that isn't complete, right? You're not Tampa Bay. So on one side of the football and on the offensive side of the football, you're lacking. Maybe you got a great defense. That's why I threw Chicago in the mix. But, you know, if you got a great defense, or and New Orleans is an obvious choice too, because if they didn't have quarterback issues, you got a great defense. You got questions on the offensive side of the football. Your best receiver just got ruled out for the entire season, but yet you still have Super Bowl aspirations and you're a top three team in your conference. You absolutely run the risk of whatever he might bring negatively to the locker room, if that's what you believe, to improve your offense so that you can stay where you want to be, which is in the top three in your conference.
You have to be desperate, in my opinion. You have to feel like you need an extra something to get over the top, especially with the trade deadline already gone. But, I mean, it's, again, desperation for me. I also think we're looking at it a little flawed, too. Like, this is going to be Odell Beckham Jr.'s decision. He has to clear waivers. I'm not so sure he clears waivers after this new adjustment that they agreed on.
And that's what I was talking about. I think that that's where the agent, his agent wanted to get more involved to keep it at a certain dollar amount, because you know what the agent's doing. He's got everybody in his office going, okay, where's everybody cap-wise? Where are the bad teams? Where are the good teams? And what number do we need to keep to be able to weed out the teams we don't want to go to? And if we can't get to that, then what's a safe number that keeps it so that most teams can't claim us off of waivers, and that because we're going to do everything we can to manipulate it so we can make the choice, not them.
Yeah, I believe that there are some back-channeling deals right now with the agent. No doubt about it, the agent's like, oh, do not claim him. They want him to test free agency. Odell Beckham's never been a free agent, too, by the way, so it'd be kind of interesting on who he chooses. 713-780-ESPN, the Texans go into that tough place to play, Hard Rock Cafe Stadium, whatever they're calling it in Miami. They take on the Dolphins on Sunday. Spread not very big in this game with the addition of Tyrod Taylor. Miami a 5.5-point favorite. They're not expecting many points, 46 points. If you look at the DVOA stuff, they list Miami as the 27th overall team in the NFL, Texans at 31. Miami the 25th offense in the NFL, Texans dead last at 32. So they're getting a boost with Tyrod Taylor, who was playing well before the injury. And then the Texans with a slightly better defense, 23 versus Miami's 26. What are the Texans getting with the Miami Dolphins, Dale? Dolphins, not Delphins.
Thank you. That's the most appreciative thing I can really feel about this show right now. The fact that you said not Dolphins. It's an atrocious name, by the way.
I agree.
No, your pun or whatever you're doing, your wordplay. I would say they're getting a team that is far more talented than they're putting out on the field. And their stars, or the guys they expect to be stars, are not, you can't expect them on a week-to-week basis, whether it be Xavier Howard who can't practice, or Byron Jones who misses time, or obviously the Will Fuller stuff. And then you have Devontae Parker who's downgraded to doubtful. They're a team that has woefully played under their alleged talent, and the talented players can't be depended on. So when you add those two things together, you're getting a bad football team. And you can talk about there's also some coaching issues where there's some who's the coordinator, who isn't. Play calling seems to – and player deployment seems to be a problem as well. They're a team that's bad on almost every level, and it fall and all the bleep runs downhill to the young quarterback, where at this point in his development process, he should be pushed up by everyone around him, an alleged playoff team, as opposed to being held down. And I think that's the problem.
Is George Godsey calling plays?
That was a question. Like, is it Charlie Fry, who was Tua's personal dude, who they have a relationship with? Is it Eric Stutzville? They do believe that the uptick the last two games, or before the Buffalo game, they played a good team on the road. The two games previous where Tua had played better was about streamlining the play calling and Godsey being the dude. The questions before were about Charlie Fry possibly calling the plays. They're much, that OC thing is much like the Texans where before Casario came around, where you didn't know who did things, who made draft picks, who cut guys, who made decisions. They've been very murky about that, and that's been Brian Flores' biggest blind spot. He's now on, when you include the almost three co-OCs, like five coordinators and three offensive coordinators in 3 years. He fired one after year one, mm-hmm. got rid of. Well, why he hired Chan Gailey to begin with, no one understood, particularly when you had a young quarterback and Gailey didn't want to play the young quarterback. That was Ryan Fitzpatrick's personal chauffeur or valet, apparently. So he got rid of him when Fitzpatrick was gone. Now we're on three guys who no one really knows. If he loses his job, it will probably be about mismanagement of talent and his inability to find a coordinator to develop a young quarterback.
See, that's why Miami season is more frustrating if you're a Dolphin fan than the Texans season. Because coming into the year, Miami, they're a team that's going to contend and be a playoff team, and you're expecting that next step with Tua. The Texans, everybody saw this coming. Everybody, like, the over-under was four. Everybody felt like the Texans were going to have a tough time getting to four. And looking at Brian Flores, I'm having a tough time seeing him surviving this year. Like, it all came crashing down for him.
Really?
Well, the back half of the schedule is soft, but when you lose to Jacksonville, you can lose to anyone. So, but you look at the back half of the schedule, it starts this week with the Texans. They get a bit of an upgrade with Tyrod Taylor. You have the Jets twice. You have, I'm trying to think, I have to go look at it, but the Giants, I think, are on this thing too, maybe. They play the NFC South. So they have the Saints with whoever who knows who the quarterback is. Carolina with Sam Darnold
or who knows who the quarterback is.
Yeah. So the back half of the schedule there is an opportunity to win, but you can't ever depend on a 1-1 team going on and winning games. So if you think they start to live up to some of the preseason hype, that's a team that could probably scratch out maybe 5 to 6 wins. Would that be enough? If you say, hey, Tua played better, we took advantage of the back half of the schedule. It sure was a disaster, but there's some positivity. I think Brian Flores' job depends on if these last 8 games, 9 games of Tua, you see some growth and you go, okay, we're a solid quarterback. We don't have to tear this entire thing down because we made a mistake.
So I'm looking at it right now. You got 2 against the Jets, 1 against the Giants, the Panthers, as you mentioned, the Saints, Tennessee, and the Patriots. Those are all games they should be in. Yep. The thing that's weird to me, but it goes back to the Janet Jackson philosophy. You overachieved a year ago. You overachieved to the point where you got the rebuild going a lot quicker than you otherwise would be, and that's why they were so concerned about getting the right franchise quarterback sooner rather than later, because they had all the other pieces. Now, all of a sudden, because of this year where your young quarterback gets hurt again early in the season, you're telling me you think he could lose his job?
Yeah, so the Giants were the 17th game. They're playing the NFC South, then they have the 17th game. That's the Giants. That's the one that got included. So there it is. You hit the nail on the head. Last year wasn't supposed to be a 10-win year. I mean, they were going to bring Tua along slowly because of his injury at Alabama. Fitzpatrick was supposed to guide them through the year. Maybe if the thing ran off the rails, we get Tua in the back, like the last 5 or 6 games to see what he has. And then 2021 is the full year of Tua. But when you win a lot before you're supposed to, then you start to question, oh, he had to bench Tua in a couple games and Ryan Fitzpatrick won. So it starts the narrative, it's Tua the guy. And then you hear about Deshaun. It changes the trajectory of what the rebuild was supposed to be, and now everything's on fast forward, whether it be you make bad decisions in free agency because you think you're ready to go. I mean, the Will Fuller thing, most apparent. you get a guy who can't be on the field. Devontae Parker's another receiver who can't be on the field. I think winning 10 games kind of changed everything, and now Now, all of a sudden, you can get fired because 10 wins should have turned into a playoff appearance.
Big game on Sunday in terms of draft implications because both of these teams have one win. Both of these teams should be wanting to lose, except the Dolphins. You have Brian Flores, who's coaching for his job. If the Texans win, how does it happen?
I think you have to hope with Tyrod Taylor there's an uptick in offense and the Dolphins play the game like they have played multiple games with this offense. They don't challenge the Texans down the field. With the Texans and the way they play defense, you should be trying to take shots. The Dolphins don't take shots. The Dolphins running game is not good. So if the Dolphins want to play in a box, it benefits the Texans quite a bit. The Dolphins should be trying to use Jalen Waddle, which they haven't really all year long as a deep threat. They probably won't have Devontae Parker, so the other receiver will probably be Mac Wilson, who actually when he plays isn't bad. Or Mac Hollins, excuse me, but he's not a legitimate number one wide receiver. So they're going to be limited. If you're the Texans, go find Gesicki, because that's the one guy who can punish them if they don't pay attention. The Dolphins are bad. They don't really defend the run very well. And if Tyrod Taylor can run around and extend some plays, they can make some plays in the passing game with Brandon Cooks and his speed. I don't know if the Texans will do it, but if you're a Texan fan, hope for over routes. An over route is when you start the receiver on one side, and if he's on man coverage, he simply just beelines across the field. Those are things that have hurt the Dolphins in the past.
Can you explain this to me, though, Dell? What happened that they fell off so quickly after last year? I understand that. I completely agree with you. They overachieved last season, but they still had a lot of promise. They seemed like they stockpiled a lot of draft picks, a lot of young players. They were building it all in the right direction. Now, all of a sudden, say they're not a very good football team. How does it fall off that quickly?
The defense was a turnover machine last year. It covered up some of their flaws. They were bend, but will make a big play to change the complexion of the game. I don't know when it ended, but they are on some 20-plus game streak of creating a turnover. They did it all year last year. Xavier Howard had his 10 interceptions. It was just what they did. Those turnovers aren't coming in bunches anymore. It's not setting up an offense who is probably poorly coordinated, and it was last year too with short fields. And if your defense has holes and you can't use turnovers to kind of masquerade them, you get punished. And they're getting you read the DVOA stats. The defense has been bad. It is the unit that's the most expensive unit, and it hasn't lived up to it. And then when your starting quarterback gets hurt a couple plays into week two, it changes your season, and it has.
Still riding the Dolphins as my survivor pick. And still riding with my boy Landon Roberts, too, hoping that they beat up on the Houston Texans.
Oh, Landon Roberts. Can he miss another tackle? I appreciate it,
Landon. By the way, did anybody see Shaq Lawson last night? Speaking of ex-Texans and Dolphins and all that, there was a sighting or two where the one play he made to keep Carson Wentz out of the end zone was pretty nice.
He was really good last week, too. Had the deflection and the interception critical in their victory. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. If it's not Correa playing shortstop next year for the Astros, then who? That's next. Killer B is ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Stay up to date with the latest innovations hitting the city of Houston by visiting innovationmap.com or follow them on any of your social media platforms. Just search Innovation Map. Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
All right, Carlos Correa, a free agent, along with six other Houston Astros. Carlos Correa, Yimi Garcia, Marwin Gonzalez, Kendall Graveman, Zach Greinke, Brooks Raley, Justin Verlander. Correa is going to be interesting. Yimi Garcia on a much lesser scale will be interesting to see if the Astros have interest in bringing him back. Marwin Gonzalez will be gone. Kendall Graveman will be interesting on a smaller scale to see if the Astros bring him back. Zach Greinke will be gone. I could see him bringing back Brooks Raley.
I hope they bring back Graveman. I think as long as Dusty's still the manager, there's even more incentive to bring back Brooks Raley because he likes him so much.
And I just want him to be up every day. I don't even care if he pitches. I just want him up in the bullpen so I can tweet daily Raley. Was solid in the back half of the year. Whenever he's only facing lefties and you try to manipulate that three-batter minimum and Raby comes in for the final out of an inning, he can be effective. He can get lefties out. And then Justin Verlander, I've seen some talks, like looking at the forecast of the offseason, that the Astros might not give Justin Verlander a qualifying offer. I couldn't disagree more. Jim Crane flat out said he's going to give a qualifying offer to Justin Verlander. And in my opinion, if he takes it, okay, that's fine. Like, you can be our pitcher for one more year. We're cool with that. And if he doesn't take it, which no one thinks draft he will, you get that draft pick, get that compensation.
I totally agree with you. That's exactly how they should look at it, think about it. They shouldn't have, like, happy feet and think that, oh, no, what if he takes it? The worst, there could be a lot worse things to deal with than if he takes it. Because if he takes it at that number and he's anywhere close to what he was pre-injury, you're going to be just fine.
Yeah, I'd be happy with Verlander between $17 and $19 million for one year.
Now you got to find a home for Odorizzi.
Yeah,
even
would,
more
at
so.
At that point, for sure. You can make the case if you don't bring back a starting pitcher that Odorizzi could have a home on this team. But if you bring a starter in, you have to figure you're getting rid of Odorizzi. 7790 texting in about Maton. Maton's under club control for the next few years. So the Astros found something there. And I mean, he didn't really pitch well after the Astros acquired him, but then in the postseason, he was Nels.
I tweeted this a few weeks before the playoffs started. I believe in it more so now, and you and I talked about it briefly when the playoffs started. Colin McHugh coming back to this Astros team, I could think of things a lot worse. He would be a great addition. If Correa was, you know, stomping for bringing back his boy Marwin this year, and Marwin really didn't do a whole lot, I could tell you another guy that could come back and do a whole lot more, and that would be Colin McHugh in this bullpen. And you could do a lot worse than Colin McHugh out of your bullpen. I'd take you back in a heartbeat.
McHugh has reinvented who he is. I mean, whenever he was with the Astros, he was a middle-of-the-rotation starter that had good numbers. I mean, he had a couple of good years, but he's turned into one of the – I mean, this season, one of the best relievers in all of baseball.
And because of the fact that you and I talked about, I believe it was yesterday or the day before, the fact that with the fact that you probably – whatever you decide to do with Odorizzi, and I believe they're going to try and trade him, and the fact that you're going to move Javier into the starting rotation, you need a long relief guy. He's that guy. He can give you one inning. He can give you three innings. He's all, you know, the way he was with the Astros was as an ex-starting pitcher, if you need him to get multiple innings, he had no problem with it. And he could still bounce back. He knew how to get ready. He knew how to bounce back. Those are key factors in a bullpen guy. I'd take Colin McHugh in a heartbeat.
He threw 64 innings this year in 37 games. So, I mean, that's right there. I mean, he's going multiple innings, right? Yep. I mean, 64 sure innings and 37 appearances is more than one inning per appearance. I mean, that doesn't take rocket science figuring that out. I believe in adding to this bullpen. I want Graveman back. I would love two more relievers that you can count on, and one of them being like a true bona fide left-handed stud that can get righties out too, especially if you're not bringing back Carlos Correa. Todd Callis, who's the TV voice of the Houston Astros for AT&T Sportsnet, he was on the Wheelhouse yesterday, and he talked about the Astros' biggest offseason priority, and no surprise, it's shortstop.
The big one is going to be what you guys talked about already, the Carlos Correa situation. And if he does, in fact, leave, then you've got to address shortstop. I think Jeremy Peña is a guy who could eventually take over in that shortstop position, but I don't think next year is necessarily the right timing for that. I like to see Jeremy get one more year at least in the minor leagues. He really came on strong this year, but he was injured most of the year. So with that being said, you look for a shortstop for next year.
So that was Callis on the Wheelhouse yesterday, full interview, ESPN975.com. Look, pretty much stating the obvious there. This was the one that I found interesting from Todd Callis, was about the chances Carlos Correa could return.
I think it's less than 50-50 right now because the Astros don't give out those lengths of contracts that Carlos is looking for. Now, if you're ever going to set a precedent in the Jim Crane era with a guy, then you would do it with number one, Carlos Correa. But they've extended Altuve, they've extended Bregman, but not to the length the contract that Carlos is probably going to be looking for. So we'll see what happens. You never say never, and I'm hopeful that I'm wrong. But if I was going to place odds on it, I'd say it's less than 50-50 that he's back.
I actually thought that was high. And look, you have to put as part of the equation, it's the TV broadcaster for the Houston Astros, so it changes the calculus there. Like, if he tells you 50%, you probably have to subtract 10% right out of the top, right? Like, you just have to. Mm-hmm. But he says less than 50-50, so let's just assume he's saying 40%. Let's throw in our little math equation too, TV voice, take away an extra 10%. That's still a 30% chance, and that's three times as high as I think, because I've been saying 10%. Yep. You've thought it's a little bit more likely than that. But I thought that was pretty optimistic from Todd Callis about the chances of Carlos Correa returning.
Well, and then the intangibles that we haven't talked about because of Daniela's history and her roots here locally, because of the fact that he continues to speak highly and talk positively about the organization, how he grew up from a child to a man here, how they took a chance on him by drafting him where they did and developing him and all those things. He loves Altuve. He loves the guys in the locker room as well. And the fact that maybe if that all factors in and you can say, okay, we're not going to go 10. And that's why I keep going back to you bringing this to the table and you being absolutely spot on with this. in the fact that if you can front load the first couple of years, but make it for less than 10 and be in that, you know, 7-8 range, and 8 might be painful, but if you can go 5-7 for sure, but if you're kind of hovering in that area and Jim Crane decides this is going to be my decision at the end of the day and I'm okay with it, that if Correa's okay with it on the other side, they can still find a way to get a common ground and make it happen. It's just that he's going to also have to have a hard conversation with his agent that says, you do realize if this doesn't go to plan with you on the field, this would be your last and only opportunity to get this much money, and for you to think in year 9 and 10 that you can come back and get another big deal, it's not going to happen.
If not Carlos Correa, then who? Because I don't think
I
it's very likely.
I think it is.
Major League Baseball putting together this this list of the top free agents based on WAR. Marcus Semien was the top second baseman, so he's under the second baseman list, but he's capable of playing shortstop. A 7.8 WAR, he'd be the top WAR player that's in the free agency market at shortstops. Carlos Correa is second. Then you have Trevor Story, Corey Seager, and Javier Baez. It's kind of the top tier of shortstop. Baez probably a little bit lower. If you're going to spend a long-term contract for a shortstop, it's going to be Carlos Correa. So that, in my mind, eliminates Trevor Story. That, in my mind, eliminates Corey Seager. Marcus Semien is an option if you don't go Correa because you still have the room to give a large contract in terms of what you're paying a guy for a single season, but it doesn't have the long duration. After that, though, I mean, absolutely nobody on the free agency market. Jose Iglesias, who's not hitting worth a darn, can't defend the position anymore, 32 years old. Freddie Galvez, same thing, can't defend, not a very good hitter. Andrelton Simmons, who Jake Asman mentioned as a possible rental last year, he can't hit a lick.
He's
Martin Maldonado that plays shortstop. Now, he used to defend it really well at a gold glove caliber. He still defends it pretty well, but not as good as he once did in his 20s. So if you look at the free agency market, if you're rolling out Story, Seager, and Baez because if you're paying money, you're paying it to Correa, you're really limited if you want to sign a free agent to either Correa or Semien. Now, if you can go the trade route, that would be another option, or you could just dip into the minors, and Jeremy Peña would probably be that guy. But is he ready? If you believe Todd Callis, maybe a year away.
I kept telling you, and this is before any rankings came out or national media got involved, I just think because it makes so much sense when you follow the Astros mold of what they're trying to do, right? They don't want it to go long term. They don't want to go big dollars. That $30 million a year threshold was something that they seem to be really struggling with as well. If you could get Semien on a 3-year, $75 million deal and essentially get the money you offered Correa to, as your last-ditch effort to get him before the season started, but get a guy that, yes, is a little older, but you know what, has experience and has put up big numbers for more than 1 year and has played a very good shortstop for you, for the A's, for Major League Baseball, to give you some kind of point of reference to say, this is a guy that can still do it. His offensive numbers were absolutely off the charts and better than Correa last year while he played second base for the Blue Jays. It's a short-term deal, 3 years. That's it. Then by then, Peña's going to be ready. You'll have other options. You don't even know if the rest of your core is going to be worth going after another big name, so maybe you just turn it over to the development of the young players anyway. But regardless, it buys you some time. It gets you a guy that I believe is better offensively but is not as good defensively, though he's not a slouch. And he fits the exact parameters the organization wants, which is short-term at a reasonable money.
Yeah, to me, there's only three options that can be playing shortstop next year for the Houston Astros, and it's Correa, it's Semien, and it's Jeremy Peña. Unless there's an unlikely trade out there, it's one of those three guys. I don't see
I know you
option,
don't like the other
happen.
Option, but there is one more option.
What is that?
That's Alex Bregman.
Oh, yeah. See, I don't even put that on my radar.
But I think you have to because he's internal and because it gives Click another option, too. Because you know what? Analytics guys, they love to have all different, every opportunity and every avenue at their beck and call. So if it isn't a shortstop that everybody thinks they're focused on, they could get a third baseman and put Bregman at short. You're absolutely right in the fact that it's not ideal defensively because I do believe you lose in range and throwing arm. But I don't think he's going to kill you and be a below-average defender, but you could make it work.
Yeah. There are some third basemen on the market, too, if you want to go that route, that are pretty good. Chris Bryant's the one that everybody mentions. Kyle Seager would be more of a stopgap that had
a
pretty decent year, and he'd be cheap and, you know, kind of a one-year, two-year deal where maybe you're just trying to buy a year for Jeremy Peña, and then you move Bregman back to third. So we'll see what the Astros do in the offseason. They're going to have a big end-of-season press conference today at 3. We'll have you covered with that, of course, next week.
That's when they're supposed to announce Dusty Baker's extension.
You would think so. He's going to be
one
of the three guys there.
if you're going to fire the guy, I don't think he's going to be president.
I mean, it's one of two things. It's extension or retirement,
right.
And retirement hasn't been anywhere on the radar. So
he said at the end of the season that's the one thing he didn't want to do.
Yeah, so I mean, it's pretty obvious, I think, what's going to happen today at that press conference. 713-780-3776. When we come back, we'll take a look at the game's biggest week, or the week's biggest games in the NFL. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. You're listening to the Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
Let's take a look at the big games around the NFL this weekend. One of these games, not nearly as big anymore. My biggest beef with the whole Aaron Rodgers thing is that he's depriving me of what should have been the game of the week. Green Bay 7-1 going to Arrowhead to face the 4-4 Chiefs. Chiefs are 7.5-point favorites now, by the way, because no Aaron Rodgers. Yep. The over under 48. How you feeling about Jordan Love?
I already told you, not well. I don't have a bit of confidence. Lisa asked me over and over about it, too. I said, we can make plans on Sunday afternoon. I just don't feel good at all about it. And everything that I've seen said no. Now, Devontae Adams is back with them, and he's already said this is, again, what makes you concerned as much as you should have confidence. He said he's finally starting to look in practice like the first-round pick we spent on him. Well, if it's taken this long, there's nothing that tells me in getting to this point I should believe that he now suddenly has all of a sudden out of the blue figured it out, because he's playing against his own defense as a scout team guy. I don't think when he gets to the real speed of the NFL, no matter how bad the Chiefs defense may be, that he's going to figure it all out.
You got to give him a chance though, right? Long term.
Well, I mean, you have to, because this is, you got to figure out what you got. I had heard a lot of people back home prior to the deadline say that they were willing to trade him because they're already ready to pull the plug and say, hey, for the sake of keeping Aaron and realizing they got to admit they made a mistake, they were thinking about moving him. The fact that now you've got to find out between now and the offseason, when everything comes to a head with Rodgers, is he worth keeping or are you going to move on?
Yeah, maybe this is a get-right game for Kansas City. They beat the Giants last week but didn't look good doing it. If they lose to Green Bay, look, Green Bay is more than Aaron Rodgers. The defense has been good. Devontae Adams coming back. Aaron Jones, good running back. Green Bay is capable of winning this game. They are 7.5-point dogs for a reason. But if Kansas City loses to Jordan Love without Aaron Rodgers playing for Green Bay, that's a bad sign for Kansas City. Meanwhile, for the Cowboys, they're getting their quarterback back. Dak Prescott will play, and he let everybody know about it.
Yeah, I'm feeling good. Obviously, I had 2 weeks to do a lot of rehab and recover, get everything that I needed to, the different modalities, and I feel good. Had two great days of practice and looking forward to Sunday.
Safe to say you're playing.
Safe to say.
Safe to say he's playing.
Are you Googling that?
Yeah. Modal
modalities?
Quality. Apparently, it's a word. It means it says Modal quality.
I thought that
the
was
harmony
like
harmony had a touch of modality.
That was a feature of like the high scoring players in college football on the Saturday show with Delvin Diesel.
A particular mode in which
I've never
something
said that.
Exists
his
or
modality.
Is experienced or expressed.
Let's go to the list of modalities for this week in college football with Delvin
such
Diesel.
The worst. It's terrible.
You don't determine that that's a pattern that I try to achieve?
It's awful. Yeah, it doesn't make it any less awful.
Okay, great. I have fun with it. It's all matters.
That's what they teach you, though, in Stark Vegas. The big words like modality. Hey, used it right. I mean, Google says that that was the right word. Dak Prescott, smart. Dallas favored by 10 points in this game. I played it at 9.5. Small victory there. It's a big number, though, but at home.
Did you play the Jets last night?
I did. I did.
What did I tell you?
Yeah, we both looked at you like, first of all, it's Jake with his heart. With his Joe Namath jersey on, trying to preach to your choir, and you start singing.
He guaranteed me victory.
So then he should pay for what you lost.
I'm an impressionable young man.
you let a...
He was wearing the jersey and everything. I was buying in. Wow. I was ready to run through that
fake
brick wall.
Some would lead you to believe that's another reason why you should not believe it.
If a man comes to work in a jersey when it's not, and it's not jersey day at work, he just wears it, you don't trust him.
I thought it was good vibes. Namath guaranteeing. It felt like good karma to me.
We hadn't heard of Mike White, and he got hurt. We hadn't heard of Mike White before last week, really, and you backed them?
If Mike White would have played, they would have covered.
Dell and I don't always agree on much, but for us to both tell you right off the top, that's a bad idea. That should have given you every indication you needed to not do that.
A road team traveling on a short week.
Yeah.
And they're the Jets.
But he was wearing a Namath jersey, and he guaranteed
it. But Namath wasn't playing.
You keep going to this jersey thing as a factor. That's a bigger problem.
I mean, look, I don't feel very good about it now. I mean,
shouldn't have felt good about it then.
If he came in wearing, like, just a T-shirt and a jeans, you should have felt better.
Yeah.
The jersey suggests he's out of his mind.
Well, I mean, I learned that lesson yesterday.
He just told you after the fact, too, in the discussion we had, about his over-the-top, overzealous fandemonium for the team. And you don't think that that's influencing his decision as much as a smart business bet with a good play to play? No, come on.
I mean, you're telling me things I figured out as that game was going on.
The jersey should have been the stop. The clue and the evidence that I shouldn't listen to this man.
Guaranteed the cover. 713-780-ESPN if you want to tell me how stupid I am. 713-780-3776. Meanwhile, in New Orleans, no Jameis Winston. Trevor Siemian expected to start over Taysom Hill. I was surprised by that. Like, I understand that Siemian kind of, you know, it calmed the tide a little bit in that Tampa Bay game. He still won the game after Jameis Winston went out. But I expected him to go to Taysom Hill because, in my opinion, Taysom Hill is a little more volatile of a quarterback. I think his ceiling's higher than Siemian. His floor is lower than Siemian. But I feel like they kind of need that volatility at the position because I don't see New Orleans being a team that can run through the gauntlet of the NFC playoffs without getting good quarterback play.
So if Taysom Hill's healthy, and that's a big if because of all the concussions and how long it's kept him out, but if he's healthy, and I always kind of stick to this philosophy, which is, don't change up multiple positions, right? The one thing that you have with Taysom Hill playing the Swiss Army knife is you've got something not many teams in this league have that the defenses have to respect. If you put him at quarterback, you not only have to see if he has the capabilities of executing as the every down quarterback, but you also take away one of the weapons that's been valuable to your offense no matter who's at quarterback. So the fact that you keep Siemian at quarterback and keep Taysom Hill where he belongs, now you're just trying to fill the void at quarterback instead of trying to recalibrate two different positions.
Yeah. I like Atlanta's side of this game, though, at plus +7. You know, a quarterback, and I know Siemian was able to calm the tide a little bit in that game against Tampa Bay. Atlanta's decent, I think. They have some decent players on the offensive end. I like what Matt Ryan's doing with Kyle Pitts. The Calvin Ridley, the fact that he's gone is kind of concerning. We haven't even talked about that. Mm-mm. I hope everything's all right with Calvin Ridley. But look, backup quarterback playing a touchdown that you're giving up, I'm taking Atlanta here, plus +7.
I don't know if I'd go that far. I still think the one thing you're kind of sleeping on is the fact that the Saints' defense is really good.
They are good.
It continues to get better because they get healthier. When they get those secondary guys back to add to Davenport and all the different guys they have on defense that have been playing really well, and Jordan and all those guys, and I think one of the most underrated linebacking cores in football, I think that's where you have to put your eyes on before you make a bet like that, because I think the Saints are going to limit what the Falcons are going to do offensively. And I think because you have a guy that has starting quarterback experience in the NFL and Siemian, not that you're going to get close to what you had with either Drew Brees or Jameis Winston, but I think that he'll be able to put some points on the board. He didn't look bad last week. I think I wouldn't touch that one.
Yeah, I'm going Atlanta plus +7, just taking advantage of the backup quarterback. Plus, I like big numbers with low over-unders. Like, it's a 7-point spread where the total is only 42 points. You have a low total, mm-hmm. a big spread, so I kind of like playing that more as a situational play.
Speaking of what you were talking about in terms of with the emotions that we haven't talked about with Ridley, one guy we did talk about just because we're getting close to a break, did you see that what I didn't, and again, I didn't try to do this, I just said, look, when Ben Simmons decided that he couldn't play with the team because of the fact that he said he wasn't mentally ready, and I said, look, you want to respect the fact that that could be a medical condition, but a lot of people immediately, including myself, started wondering, are you just doing that because it's an easy out to still get your money and not play? Last night might be the factor that I might have been onto something. The Sixers fined him $360,000 for missing last night's game.
Because Ben Simmons won't see their mental health doctor. Like, if he would just see their mental health doctor and they were like, okay, you're not mentally ready to play, he wouldn't be getting fined this. So
I don't want to be that guy, but I'm going to be that.
Well, Ben Simmons is going to play hardball. Daryl Morey's needed to play hardball. And, like, you want to take that stuff seriously, absolutely, but go see the doctor. Go see the doctor that's employed by the team. So, yeah, I mean, I think that's fair what Philadelphia is doing. 713-780-ESPN. When we return, we're going to talk college football with Dell. That's next. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, I want to tell you about the good people at Apollo Men's Health. I was there bright and early this morning. I actually did my 6-month blood work to make sure that everything is on the up and up, from my cholesterol level, which has been an issue in my family's history, to my blood pressure, to the cell counts and all the other things. They do that every 6 months to make sure that everything is staying where you need it to be and your levels of other things are exactly where they need to be. And if not, they can make changes accordingly. They can do the same thing for you. I'm on a complete wellness program with them, but you might need something else. You might want more energy in your life, and therefore you might be interested in testosterone therapy. If you want the B12 shot like I get every week, I think it gives you some energy, but it does a lot of other things that they can explain for you. You want to recover quicker, there's HGH peptide therapy. You want to get on a full workout plan, they can do a full body composition analysis in less than 60 seconds, log all the data, and keep it on file so that each week or whenever you come back in, you can check and see the progress you've made, and then they can make adjustments to your workouts, your diet, and your routine. They have vitamins. They have fat burners. They have everything under their two locations, both located near downtown Houston, to better serve you. Your health is your wealth. Come on, people. You got to invest in yourself. You do it at Apollo Men's Health. From the boardroom to the weight room to the bedroom, they have answers if you have questions. Just log on to ApolloMH.com right now. Book your first appointment. Go in there and be honest with your answers when they ask you some questions when you meet with the staff. And they're going to have you on the road to feeling like you haven't felt in years. And maybe you've never felt like before. They are going to take care of you every step of the way because they care. They're good people doing great things. Check out the people at Apollo Men's Health.
ESPN 97.5. Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
I don't see you cutting rug to this and dancing around and being excited.
Selena's in my blood, man.
What song?
I was raised on Selena.
Okay.
By Last
Cumbia. 50 Cent is not in your vernacular?
I like 50 Cent. I mean, he doesn't really get me, doesn't get my hips dancing like By Last Cumbia, I will.
See, I play some Jump Around for you, no acknowledgement.
Yeah, why don't you dance? Why don't you get up and...
Because I'm not as dumb as you.
Dumb. Well, that's aggressive.
Courage, you mean?
To go out there and shake your tail feather in front of the Twitch world.
Well, they seem to like it.
They recorded it.
Record numbers on Twitch. So, big college football weekend. It's all centered around the game in Tampa with Houston going on the road to USF. 20th ranked team in the country. 19th in the coaches' poll. Houston Cougars trying to make it 8 in a row against USF.
Because I was going to give you credit...
Thank you.
For the fact that your basketball program,
yeah,
congratulations, with a massive recruit and a really good get. But you keep force-feeding this narrative about your football team. That
what do you mean force-feeding? They're 20th in the nation. That's all I said. 20th in the nation, 19th in the coaches' bowl.
You normally sell it harder than...
To win their eighth and their first place in the American Conference. But yes, you're right. Jarace Walker, a five-star committing to Kelvin Sampson. The highest recruit that Sampson's ever recruited to the University of
19th
Houston.
19th in the country, they said, overall?
First five-star since Daniel House.
Where's he from?
He plays for the IMG Academy in Florida. Noah was saying that he's originally from Pennsylvania.
Okay.
So
good get for Kelvin. You got to love everything. Look, I don't think he gets enough credit for what he's done to resurrect that entire program. And I think that it goes hand in hand with Tillman providing the facilities and the money that was needed for the facilities. But what Kelvin was able to do from a program that was just run into the ground and how quickly he turned it around and has kept it and maintained it getting a higher level to it. It's just phenomenal. And so I love seeing that for him because he's a good dude.
Season starts on Tuesday. Both Houston Cougar football and basketball teams nationally ranked. Looking at this week's slate, if you want to use the committee's ranking, which I feel terrible even doing.
Yeah.
The most competitive game, two ranked teams. You have the 13th ranked Auburn, according to the committee, against 14th ranked Texas A&M at College Station. The fighting Texas Aggies, 4.5-point favorites. Looking at these mediocre SEC teams, Dell.
That's certainly a slant.
I'm glad you got it. What do you think of that game in College Station?
You know, the Aggies are coming off a bye week, much like Auburn did last week, where they could get healthy. They faced a beat-up Ole Miss squad, and then they took advantage. I think people who looking at the score of the Aggies last two games think, okay, that offense has figured some things out. Zach Calzada's really the same guy he was before the Alabama game. Barely completing 50% of his passes. Now the running game has gotten going in their blowout wins over, I believe, South Carolina and Missouri. So
I still have my questions about him, and he's probably certainly the more questionable quarterback. Bo Nix has had his moments, but he's played better this year. I do like the Aggies coming off a bye. Jimbo generally has some things prepared offensively when he has time to get that done. I'm just worried about Zach Calzada playing against a pretty good opponent. Can he be three-fourths of what he was against Alabama? That would be enough. Because what you saw the last 2 weeks, it's more of the same from him from earlier in the year. And you're like, all right, I guess we're not building on success.
Do they need a quarterback next year?
I mean, as Jimbo actually took transfer quarterbacks, hey, look to the team in Norman and go, hey, you know, Rattler probably would fit with Ole Miss quite a bit if Matt Corral leaves.
That's another good one.
Like, if Matt Corral's
both
out.
Those are good ones.
Are we already dismissing Haynes King, though?
I wouldn't dismiss him. I just would say, hey, I'd bring in some competition for him.
Yeah. See, I think Rattler goes to the NFL.
You think so?
I don't think so, man.
Because if he goes to an Ole Miss, if he goes to a Texas A&M and then just poops the bed again, he's lost all draft value. I firmly believe he would still be a second rounder if he went to the NFL this year.
If Nick Caserio's drafting. He likes guys who barely play.
That's where NIL comes into play. If you can make more money staying in college football than you could as a second, third round pick with a chance to make an NFL roster, another reason why it might entice him even more to stay.
That's a good point. It is a good point.
I think, look, Matt Corral, before he got to Ole Miss, there were questions about his attitude. I think he played at multiple schools in California. He wound up at Ole Miss because it felt like, hey, the bigger programs weren't sure about him, and Lane Kiffin has done his thing. I think Ole Miss would be a spot for him. I think Lane Kiffin would let Spencer be Spencer. I don't know if that's a good thing or not, but I think he would fit in there as far as the attitude they may like at quarterback. And as long as he is, I guess, learned from whatever happened at Oklahoma, where it's not always going to be this easy, I think that's a good spot for him. I don't think he should go pro. I don't think coming off a benching is the best way.
Yeah, I agree.
To convince NFL people that you're their guy.
And he's going to be hyped up wherever he goes. Whether he succeeds or not on the field is another story, but he'll be hyped up, which means he'll cash in. He'll get the NIL deals, and he'll make more money than he could if he got indoctrinated to the NFL as a second, third, fourth round draft pick. So that's why I'm completely sticking with my stance. I think that's the worst decision he could make. I think there are others that would make him make more sense for him, both financially and if he truly can prove himself as a quarterback.
Looking at the week schedule, aside from Houston winning, the one team that I want to win more than any other team this week is Liberty at Ole Miss. I want Liberty to go into Oxford and beat the Rebels this weekend.
They're a little beat up. They're going to
miss. You hate Matt and Lane Kiffin or what?
No, I hate the SEC.
Doesn't like it. Understood. They're missing multiple receivers, and part of that was stemming from their game against Auburn where they got beat up. Matt Corral, what's his health like a week after hurting his ankle? He came back in that game, but, you know, I don't know how much practice he's gotten in and if he's going to be a full go as far as his ability to move, because he's a guy who depends on his legs to extend plays and even just run the football. So Liberty got Virginia Tech last year. They're a live dog. I like it. I'm going to be watching the game. And you got Corral and Malik Willis in there. I mean, if the Texans are still looking for a quarterback, if Davis Mills doesn't come back and wow everyone, there are two quarterbacks there who you might want to pay attention to.
That's the other intrigue, too. I mean, this might be the top two quarterback prospects of the NFL draft. So it's also from just like looking forward to see a couple of guys that could be in the NFL, that's the game to watch from the quarterback position this weekend, too.
Now, they don't have the prototypical size that people fall in love with. So if you're looking for another guy who has that size, maybe look at Carson Strong at Nevada. He's a big dude that the NFL is going to like, and I think the best thing that happened to him was the fact that people were like, we don't know about Justin Herbert, and then people were like, Justin Herbert fits every model of what all NFL quarterbacks people love about since really the inception of the NFL, and he might turn out to be the best of that top three. So if Carson Strong fits some of that mold, maybe that's a guy people look at, too.
Have you watched much of him?
I haven't seen a lot of him. I've seen bits and pieces.
Yeah.
Not a lot.
I haven't watched a game, but like watching him throw the football, he throws from here. He looks a lot like Philip Rivers.
I was going to say, Philip Rivers was a guy that mechanically didn't look real sound, but he found a way to get it there and get the job done. But when you think about it, when you think of the pedigree, just like Trey Lance, when a lot of people looked a lot harder, regardless of what school he was playing at and the competition he was playing, it was because there was a track record that said, might be able to find something there. The same way, like with Nevada, in the fact that hey, you look there and say, well, you know what? Harbaugh saw something in Colin Kaepernick back in the day. That turned out pretty good, too, that maybe they're doing things all right there in Nevada that you don't have to worry about what school he plays at. If he's got all the tools, the flip side is he could be Brock Osweiler.
See, that's what I'm worried about with him.
Or Mitch Trubisky.
Yeah, I haven't watched him play a full game, so it's not really me fair to evaluate. But even like his highlights give me a little bit of concern. Looking at the slate, Dell, what are a couple of games that really have your interest?
You know, they were a topic of conversation on the bench earlier today. I'm interested to see what Oregon does against the team who wants to bring them down into the mud. I mean, Washington would be glad to play a 21-17 game because they can't score any points. Their defense, good. Their offense, probably on the opposite end, just as bad. And Oregon loves to play down to competition. This is a rivalry game. I mean, we're not in the Pacific Northwest, but it's one of those. It's a big rivalry. It has been for a while. And it's in Seattle. Can Washington get Oregon to play a 17-14 game going to the fourth quarter and find a way? That would be their formula. And Oregon will gladly get into those games because Mario Cristobal, the old line coach in nature, will, yeah, if you're just going to let me run the football and play good D, I would love to do that. So that's a game I'm focused on to see if Oregon can, you know, avoid playing down to their competition in a rivalry game. And I think the spread is 7.
Yep.
And you think about those two teams, Oregon top 4 in the country, Washington at 4-4, barely got by Arizona a couple weeks ago. Shouldn't be 7. That you would think the spread would be larger than that. I think there's a formula there to see a competitive ball game going into the fourth quarter. So I'll look at that. Obviously, the Aggies versus Auburn is on the radar. And you know what? I wanted to avoid it because it's Big Ten football. But the Purdue-Michigan State game, to see Michigan State coming off a big win, and Purdue, who has done this to Ohio State garbage in the past, they're not good, and they don't have a Rondale Moore who can just decimate a defense. But let's see if Purdue can pull one more out. And they did it against Iowa because they forced turnovers. If they don't force turnovers against Michigan State, I don't see an upset happening.
See, I think Purdue overachieved early, but they're garbage. I think Michigan State is good, not great, but they've played the schedule. That's all they can do, and they've played it well, and they're overachieving. So I think, you know what, everybody's talking about them now. I don't think they're a top 4 team in the country, but I do think that they're definitely – turning the program in the right direction again. So credit to them for that. And in terms of the Washington and Oregon game, next to Oregon, Oregon State, Dell's right. The Huskies and Oregon, that's a massive game. And up there across both states, it's going to be a very, very hotly contested and very, very important game. So that plays in, and I think that's why the spread is lower than you might think.
The weather there is supposed to be a little sloppy, too. A little rain, a little cold, which could play into the upset bit a little bit, too, neutralizing
things.
Rain in
Seattle?
The Michigan State-Purdue game is kind of along those same logic, too, that Michigan State only a 3-point favorite against Purdue, who's a team that's 5-3, kind of mediocre in the Big Ten at 3-2. Did you see a couple of the new names mentioned in this TCU coaching search? Like, everybody just assumed that it was going to be Sonny Dykes. I still think it gets there at some point, although SMU apparently has given Sonny Dykes a contract that's going to pay him tons of money, like meeting his demands, but will he stay at SMU as opposed to TCU? Deion Sanders, Clemson OC Tony Elliott, which I don't know why you would touch anything with that Clemson offense right now, and then Kellen Moore's representatives apparently have reached out to TCU, current offensive coordinator with the Dallas Cowboys. Does Primetime do anything for you as a P5 head coach?
You know, the name, and you hear Primetime, and we talked about, well, some of the things, call me Coach Prime, you wouldn't call Saban that, you so on and so forth. I think there's actually some substance there. I mean, we think of Deion Sanders, and oh, okay, sure, that's a publicity move, but I think there is some substance to him as a coach. I'm not sure TCU is ready for the primetime experience. I mean, I'd love to see it. I just don't know if that school in Fort Worth is ready for all that.
That's the thing. Like, I think it's a style clash. I really think Deion Sanders is going to be the next head coach of Florida State. I really do.
Well, and I think they could do a lot worse. And I've talked to some Florida State alums that were like, he wasn't ready at the time, and there was nobody that was an ex-player pushing for it at the time. Not to say that it couldn't happen, but when you think about it, and this goes back to, we've seen this how many different times, where you get a big name that's a hot name as an ex-player. The key is going to be from an ego perspective, right? If you know what you know and you don't know what you don't know. So if you can get a good offensive coordinator, good D coordinator, your name's going to get you recruits. There's no doubt. Look what he's already done. I mean, he's gotten kids to consider going to play for him as opposed to playing for big Power 5 schools. So the fact that if he goes to your school, he's going to get talent, and he's going to do a lot of good things in terms of sponsorship and selling tickets. But then he's also going to have to give the reins of his offense and defense over to guys that really know what they're doing on a day-to-day basis as coordinators, and then go from there. If he's willing to do that, he can turn a program around. There's no doubt in my mind.
Yeah, he's 7-1 right now, leading his conference at 5-0. So the talent will go there. The wins will show up. I mean, look, Deion Sanders in Power 5 football will be awesome as a coach.
Mm-hmm.
I just wonder if it feels like it's a bit stuffy in Fort Worth, and I'm not sure.
Exactly. Well,
haven't they had a lot of stuff off the field going on and around the program for a couple of years?
What,
at TCU?
I mean, they've had player things. I don't know if it's as big as any bigger than anywhere else, but there've been some things.
Okay.
I would look that when he gets in the interview room, will they be like, huh? Maybe a little too much spice for us. With
too
Deion.
Much prime time in Fort Worth. I believe that. That's
but
why
if there's anywhere where they're
going
to back him, obviously he's close, staying in Texas and being close to where people he lived and people loved him. I think he could. It's a good fit from that perspective.
Now, his son did play at SMU. 713-780-ESPN. 713-780-3776.
His other son's playing for him now, right? He would probably just follow him.
The quarterback,
I think it's a different one. Yeah,
The receiver played at SMU. The quarterback's playing for him at Jackson State.
David Culley isn't embracing the suck. That's next. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Get low when the whistle goes.
Real fun. Get low when the whistle goes. Sports. ESPN 97.5.